The Morning Show. The home team. No, it's both. It's the crossover.
Crossover, step back!
Right here on 960theref.com.
All right, this is episode number 185 of the Crossover Podcast. Dave and Jeff along with you. I'm David Johnston from The Morning Show. Jeff Dantzler from The Home Team. Hence the name, The Crossover Podcast. Episode number 185. And of course, we love to know that you're listening to us. And if you don't have the beautiful 960 The Ref app, make sure you head to the App Store if you have an iPhone and Google Play for your Android. And Jeff, good afternoon, sir. It is Wednesday, April something, 28th. Is that right? Yes, Wednesday, April 28th as we record this. And I'm, as you can tell, I'm stammering and stuttering here to approach the NFL draft because it's taking place tomorrow night, or at least the first round, and then you've got rounds 2 and 3 on Friday, and then the other 4 on Saturday. I don't know how deep into the weeds you want to get into that.
Well, I think the key is the Falcons right now are the team everybody's got an eye
on.
You got several possibilities, and I think you start with number one, do they just stay put and take who they feel the best non-QB is? Let's say it's Kyle Pitts or Devontae Smith or Penei Sewell. Do they go ahead and make a move and see what they can get? Now, part of the problem with that, if you make the move, I've been saying Denver at 9 would be a possible trade partner, but then do you fall back too far to where you don't feel like you get one of those elite guys?
Right, right.
And then I think the third option is, do you just sit there at 4? And I think we know what's going to happen at 1 and 2. See what San Francisco does. And let's say the 49ers do take Mac Jones and somebody just covets Fields. Do you wait and then make the pick? So I think, and you can tell me if there's another option, you stand pat and take your guy, you trade right beforehand, or you wait.
I think the trading beforehand is what you've got to wait. You got to wait on that to see what the Niners do at 3.
I agree. So waiting, and then if somebody does, oh God, we got to have Fields, and then you feel like you can get more.
But I think even if you traded, say, like down to 8 or 9, you might still be able to get one of the big 5 quarterbacks. So you could trade down, and if you still wanted to get one of those quarterbacks, you potentially could.
Are you talking about like if you were the
if you're the Falcons, trade from like 4th to 9th, like swap with the Broncos?
I don't think the Falcons are going to take a quarterback.
I'm just saying if that's what they were thinking, if that's what they were looking at.
I don't think they are. But yeah, if you wanted to do that. Now, I think there's a good chance you could have quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 because of trades. Because Cincinnati's sitting there with Burrow at 5. And if that happened, then it would just be essentially starting at 6 with a second draft.
Yeah.
Whether it was Pitts or Sewell or Smith or whoever it was. So in Atlanta, in many ways, is sitting in a good spot. It is a new regime. And not that should matter. And as we well know, doing this for a long, 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 long time, winning the press conference is overrated. That might, oh, okay. But in the end, if you're a coach, a draft pick, whatever, you still got to go out and produce. But with the new regime, and Terry Fontenot, the GM, coming from New Orleans, he is obviously well acquainted with Atlanta's draft history. They do not want to flop on this.
Yeah.
So that's why I think that comes into play, whether it should or shouldn't. And that's why, I mean, to me, whether it's Sewell, whether it's Pitts, whether it's Smith, I mean, I think Pitts would probably be the best pick there. My best guess is they hang in there at 4 and just take that 5-star. But there's a lot that could happen because we all know how coveted that quarterback position is.
If they took Pitts, who's the best Gator that the Falcons have ever had? Punter John James? I know I just thought of this while we were talking.
Unless there's somebody really obvious
that we're missing.
Yeah, I think that's probably it. You know, like I said, unless, and we apologize if there's like a borderline Hall of Famer, it's like, you know, like a Deion Sanders.
That's what happens when you think of a question and just go ahead and open your mouth and ask
William
it.
William Andrews went to Auburn. Bartkowski was a Cal guy.
Yeah, I'm trying to think about
Mike Ken went to Michigan. Van Noe went to Kentucky. Frelick was Pitt. Yeah, so yeah. Jesse Tuggle was Valdosta State.
Dion
was
Bama.
A Seminole. Yeah.
Yeah,
Matt
so
Ryan, BC. John James, the excellent
punter. John James.
There you go.
But they've had to have had some. Oh, well,
well,
Keanu Neal.
They don't. Yeah, there you go. They don't take SEC guys a lot, though. So the draft is always fascinating because it does combine college football and pro football and just the maneuvering. And I think what the draft does, it gives everybody hope. And the way the NFL is set up, I think one of the best things, although we do seem to see the same teams drafting in the same spots every year, but I do think for pro football fans, you can feel like even if you were really bad, that you might not be that far from making the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And those one or two guys in the draft, maybe they get you from 4-12 to 6-10. Then you have another good draft that next year. Then maybe that gets you to, say, 9-7 and gets you that wild card. You just feel like basketball, which is so bizarre, that should be the easiest to get well in because there are only five players on the floor. But the way that the super teams have formed and the way the rookie contracts are set, you've got teams that have been in an eight-year rebuild. And then for baseball, you know, I think about before the 2010s when the Pirates made the playoffs and then the Royals won a World Series and got to a second one, that for those two teams that were great franchises while we were growing up, they were in the playoffs and won World Series. You know, these are two franchises that were in 20-year droughts where I'm not talking about places where they had losing records.
Mm-hmm.
So baseball, I think, is very difficult to get well soon. But the way football's set up, you would think it would be the easiest to get well soon in. But there's some teams like the Lions, and you know now it looks like the Browns have finally turned the corner that just –
Well, look at the Bucs. I mean, they're like – aren't they the first Super Bowl winner to come back with everybody – you know, from the previous year, you know, the salary cap will eventually knock you down.
It's going to knock you down. You know, and I think the first time we really saw that was with the Cowboys of the early to mid-90s. That was probably...
Wait, you mean the team that hasn't been to NFC championship game since 1995?
And that's when they won and they beat Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl, that 95 team.
And they... the Falcons have been to four NFC championship games since
crazy?
Then.
Isn't that crazy?
Who would have thought that?
Yeah, and one of the things that was so impressive about what New England did, and obviously they had the mainstay in Tom Brady, but when he got there, they had really built that team around a great defense.
Mm-hmm.
They had a great kicker. And then, you know, they find out they've got one of the best to ever play the game at QB. And then, you know, they went, we need to remember with the Patriots, they went from 04 to 14 without winning one.
Right.
And they went to the ones in 7-11, but you know they lost those two to the Giants. But they retooled some things. They went through a couple of steps where they got younger. So it wasn't like that. It's so crazy. They won it in 01, 03, and 04, and then they won in 14, 16, and 18.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's just the odds of that happening with the same quarterback.
The same quarterback's just nutty.
You know, it's not like, say, like if the – you know, think about, well, the Cowboys went to the Super Bowl with Staubach, and then 15 years later they did it with Aikman.
Yeah.
This is the same guy, which
is just
so nuts. But that's why it's incredibly hard to do. But one thing, and Dave, we've talked about this a lot, I think a thing you see a lot of in the draft, though, teams on the back end that are presumably already good, they tend to reload because they have the potential to get really good players who are much more highly rated, but they don't play premium positions.
That's the key there. And the Patriots have lived like
they
that
have lived with
forever.
That. And the example I always go to, and I apologize if everybody's sick of hearing me say this, but Kansas City wins a Super Bowl 2 years ago, and they land Clyde Edwards-Helaire with the last. It's almost not fair. He's a top 10, top 15 talent, but he didn't play in what this year is a quote-unquote premium position.
Yeah.
And so that's where you see teams like Pittsburgh, like Kansas City, like Green Bay. They get a terrific offensive guard, a great fullback, a great tight end, an inside linebacker, a safety, just a guy who might not be at one of those quote-unquote premium positions, but they're still really good players.
And not a household name kind of guy, but a really, really, really good player.
Well, I remember one year when this is when no backs were going in the first round for a couple of years. Green Bay got Eddie Lacy late in the second round. And, you know, he was a tremendous running back at Alabama. And you're thinking, like, good gosh, well, yeah, well, I get it. If you were 3-13, he might not do you any good. But if you got Aaron Rodgers, all of a sudden you get this workhorse back.
Yeah, yeah.
That was a tremendous pickup. So I think that's another deal. You figure if you're drafting in the top 5 to 10, you should get an elite talent. What happens, and this is where the Falcons have got caught so many times, you get in those teens, you can kind of get caught in between. And that's where you've just got to be set. Are we going with the best player? Are we going with need? And if we're going with need, it's essential not to reach. Well, Atlanta, the last two drafts, they took a guard and a tackle where they reached. The second one was a trade-up reach. And then an A.J. Terrell, the corner they took last year, I think is a good player. Again, they could have. He was projected to go late 20s. Mm-hmm. And that's where these teams get caught in between, and that's usually where
it's the worst place
trouble
to draft.
Happens.
Yeah. And hopefully the Falcons won't be drafting this high again for a while.
And that's another thing I think you have to look at. How often are you going to get a pick like this? Mm-hmm. You've got to cash in with it.
So if they took Pitts, you'd be good with that.
If I were the GM right now, and we know as well as anyone how great Devontae Smith is. I mean, just the dagger through our hearts there.
But is Waddle better?
I like Smith better. And Waddle's coming off an injury.
Yeah.
I think Pitts is the best best guy. Again, Penei Sewell might be great, but we're also just going off of what scouts are saying. He could be made up fictitious is a joke on all. Oh, yeah, yeah, Sewell's like, nobody's. I mean, come on. He didn't even play last year.
Yeah.
That's another red flag. Yeah.
Well, Jamar Chase.
That's a red flag on him,
yeah,
too.
Yeah. So you would take Pitts over Chase?
Yes.
I would too.
I think Pitts is the guy. And again, not knowing all the behind-the-scenes stuff, but all things being equal in terms of off the field, injury, everything, all things being equal, I think he's the guy who has a chance to be the elite, great impact player who would cause the most trouble for the other team.
The quarterback thing, I'm trying to think, who are going to be the top QBs in next year's draft?
That's a thing, and that's another reason why – you know, a lot of people are bullish on Georgia this year, because think about this. Beyond just what Georgia's schedule is, Alabama, Clemson, Ohio State, Florida, all got new quarterbacks. So that's one. If you're talking about openings and elite, I would guess the guy at USC, Slovis, I believe, is the quarterback at Oklahoma, Rattler. I think he's going to be a redshirt sophomore, but I'm not 100% on that. But I would still guess he would come back for another year. But I would guess Slovis would be.
So here, Walter Football, I just dug them up for next year's mock draft. They've got the quarterback from Texas Tech going number one. Of course, all this stuff can change at the drop of a hat. This was updated today. His name is Tyler Show.
He's the next Pat Mahomes.
He's the next Mahomes. Number two is Sam Howell from North Carolina.
He's terrific, yes.
Number three is Slovis from USC. Number four is a defensive end linebacker from Oregon named Kayvon Thibodeau. Not from LSU, but from Oregon. And then number five, if the Falcons have the fifth pick again, Derek Stingley, the cornerback from LSU.
He's a great player. He's elite.
Yeah.
And that is one thing with this draft, and there's going to be some great players that come out of it, but there's not that surefire elite defender coming out. You know, there's not that. What we saw in the SEC, you had back-to-back years with Roquan Smith and then Devin White from LSU at middle linebacker.
Yeah.
You know, if there's a Khalil Mack type guy coming out, or, you know, you think about those defensive linemen that Alabama was putting out, like Jonathan Allen or Deron Payne.
Sure.
There's not, or, you know, Derrick Brown from Auburn is another great example. So, you know, obviously there are a lot of good players coming out, but there's not really that elite impact defender. Whereas I think, you know, the name you just mentioned there, I would guess this time next year, yes, Stingley would probably be the top defender coming out, at least from our neck of the woods.
This draft also has Matt Corral going number 12, and Brenton Cox going 15.
Wow.
A lot of things can change. I'm going to say that's not going to happen that way, but hey, who knows?
And JT's obviously a guy who could put himself.
I was kind of scrolling to see if he might be in that first round.
Because the thing is, if Georgia has a great year and he plays good, he's going to be a first-round pick.
That's what you hear. That's what everyone seems to say.
He's very talented, and you know the thing too that we're certainly seeing, and you know obviously not all have panned out. A lot have, but one of the things with the SEC, and then if you throw in just what I would say SEC country, you want to factor in say Clemson, Florida State, Miami as well, recruiting the same athletes. It's the best training ground. And if you're a GM sitting there, you go, if this guy is a guy and he's at Florida, Alabama, Georgia, LSU, that's the best predictor to me on how a guy is going to play in the NFL. And again, not that it's 100%, but I would say this. If you said to me, all right, who's got a better shot? Who is the sure bet to be a phenomenal NFL player? Heisman Trophy winner or the SEC's Defensive Player of the Year? I'll take the SEC's Defensive Player of the Year.
Sure. I'm going to tell you right now, the SEC's Defensive Player of the Year is a good player.
He's a good player.
Yes.
He's a good player. We've had a couple and we've seen a bunch. So,
yes.
You know, that's a guy. So I think back through the years, you know, obviously all of our great players at Georgia, guys like Terry Hogue and Roquan Smith and Thomas Davis and Champ Bailey. But then thinking about some of the elites we've seen, you know, guys like, say, Wilbur Marshall at Florida, you know, players like, say, Glenn Dorsey from LSU, Patrick Willis from Ole Miss, just guys. And we just mentioned off all those defensive linemen from Alabama that we've seen, or guys like Derrick Brown or Takiyo Spikes from Auburn and from the state of Georgia.
Yeah.
You know, those are the guys, like you were saying. And now, a lot of Heisman winners obviously have been great pros, but, you know, sometimes that can be more statistical predicated, but it's a pretty darn good bet. If you're the SEC's Defensive Player of the Year, you're a stud.
You're a stud, yeah.
And you should be a top 10 pick.
By the way, we'll move on in just a second here. This mock draft had two Bulldogs going in the first round next year. Do you care to guess who they have right now?
For this draft?
For the 22 draft.
For the 2022 draft?
I'm putting you on the spot. This is going to be tough.
No, I'm all right. Well, let me ask real quick. I got to cheat a second. Is JT Daniels
one of
them?
He's not one of them.
Okay. Then I would guess top of my head, Trayvon Walker.
You would think, but no.
All right, well, then he needs to come back. N'Kobe Dean?
Nope. One of them is Pickens.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. I thought that's not fair because you're probably not thinking of him because
then
he's
I would
hurt.
Guess either Salyer or Davis.
The other one is Nolan Smith.
Nolan Smith, okay.
Yeah. Are we waiting for him to just have that breakout season?
I think so. And I wonder if sometimes on those draft predictors there, they're looking at guys who were great high school players who haven't had the big college year yet.
Yeah.
Now, and then Nolan's been a good player, and Georgia does move guys around a lot, but, you know, it's...
And he doesn't... I guess they don't play as many snaps as if they went to other schools.
Sure.
Which I think is a good thing, not a bad thing.
For sure, more tread on that. But I've got a feeling this year it's going to be more because, obviously, especially on the defense, we're going to have a lot of guys going that are either seniors or draft-eligible underclassmen. I think this is a year you're going to see Georgia go more with its guys. And a lot of that, the depth is very good at linebacker, but Georgia's lost Ojulari, you know, Jermaine Johnson left, Monty Rice is gone. And I get it. It's a constant battle, and you got to play a lot of guys because – you know, it's getting more snaps down the road. Yeah, it keeps you fresher. It helps you in recruiting. But there are times, too. I mean, when it's a big game, you got to go with your guys.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just guessing that Georgia's going to go with its guys more, especially if it's, say, Nolan Smith's a great example, who's a junior. If he's good, he's going to be gone.
Right.
So I think you got to get the maximum impact out of a player like that. And the thing now, too, is – There are so many more games, about 12 regular season games, and most teams have got at least one softy or two. There are chances for guys to get snaps. But there are times, you know, watching a game, no matter who you're following, and I get it with the situational substitution, but there are times, too, when you're thinking, whoever your team may be. Well, don't take that guy. They can't block him. It's like, well, he's a middle linebacker. He's third and long. If the other guy's happy, you're taking a guy out, you're probably subbing too much. And that's where, for LSU, as great as that team was in 19, and I mean, that was a unicorn, but, to stay healthy like that, they essentially had an all-SEC to all-American caliber player at every position. They rarely subbed. They just went with their guys. And I think that's one of the reasons they had so much success against both Alabama and Georgia, because those are two teams that are great. Coach Saban and Coach Smart, at the situational defensive substituting. Well, they scored 37 on us, and I think it was 43 or 46 against Alabama. Mm-hmm. And, they're just times if they're staying with the same 11 and we're used to, and Alabama was used to subbing in this guy or that guy, I think that caught you on your heels some.
Sure.
So now again, the odds of having a Burrow and an Edwards-Helaire and all those receivers and allowing and keeping everybody healthy
perfect
the whole
storm
time.
Came
it was
together
a perfect
for
storm.
Them.
It's hard to do.
And Brady being there too. And yeah, I mean, it all came together.
It is, but football's a constant evolution of.
By the way, does LSU, do they capitalize on their big seasons better than any other
better
school?
Better than anybody. Now, they did lose the game to Alabama the 2011 season, but their three national titles also came in the Superdome. I'll tell you,
that's a good point.
The difference between LSU and Georgia the last 20 years, LSU has capitalized in the Superdome. Georgia has not in Atlanta.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's been the Georgia Dome and it's been the Benz.
Yep. I mean, those three.
Two buildings.
You talk about life changers. Those three games against inside last decade.
Sure.
And, they obviously. So
maybe it had more to do with you-know-who than the building.
Yeah. Yeah, but, it's just and then, talking about LSU, that 2011 team, that was the first of two times you-know-who.
Mm-hmm.
No matter the format, whether it was the playoff or the BCS, didn't play in the SEC title game, but got a shot at the title against an SEC team.
Yeah.
So it's brutal.
Dredging up some bad memories.
No,
didn't mean
I know,
to do that.
But LSU has definitely capitalized. And I really do think we'll get there. I don't know if it's going to happen this year. I think Georgia's got a great chance. But yeah, as we know, so much has got to go right. You got to have a great team. You got to get some breaks with the schedule. Coach McGill always said the four keys to winning, you got to have the horses. You got to have a coach who does more good than harm. Well, we've certainly got that. He goes, and now here are the two things you got to have good luck when it comes to injuries in the schedule, and it sure as hell helps if the other team has bad luck with injuries in the schedule.
Yeah.
And I remember back even that 2002 season that Georgia had, Coach Rick's first SEC championship team, just going through that year. Casey Clawson was out for Tennessee. When we beat Alabama the week before, their starting center, I think his name was Alonzo Ephraim, he was hurt. Cadillac didn't play for Auburn.
Right.
And does Green to Johnson happen if Cadillac's playing?
Probably not.
Probably not.
Yeah.
Tech had, remember, they had like nine guys suspended before the year.
Right.
And because they had a really good running back, like Tony Hollins or something. And then Florida State's quarterback, Chris Ricks, was out of the SEC title game.
Yep.
And Arkansas had a last-second comeback to beat LSU. And
that's right.
I would have liked Georgia, but I was much more relaxed playing Arkansas than I would have been playing LSU.
Yeah, and that game was essentially over on that block punt.
Yes.
Yeah. That game was.
I sat next to Coach Cavan and Coach Dooley for that game, and we blocked the punt and kind of got a score chart, and it was Smith 2 yards running. Coach Cavan goes, "Man, I could do this, Coach. Look at this play chart. One play, 2 yards, 2 seconds, touchdown." I'm like,
touchdown.
"That's what I'm talking about."
And you also
about.
Get a first down out of
That's
it.
That's exactly right. That's what I'm talking about.
So you get a first down and a touchdown.
So, man, I could be a genius offensive coach doing
but
that.
But it kills your yards per carry.
It's true. That is one thing, though. I've thought on back sometimes with YPC, if you get a TD or if you dive for a first down, and we've seen how many great backs have we seen through the years, that's where you can't just go straight on stats, that turn a 2 yard loss into a 2 yard gain.
Mm-hmm.
Like Noshon was really good at that. The like Cadillac was great. It's like you'd feel like you have him hemmed up and he gets 3 yards. And those prove to be – those are the body blows. Then when the great back later in the game breaks the 70-yarder.
Then all of a sudden, kind of like what we saw with Swift in that SEC championship game against Auburn.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That's a great example.
By the way, so the Alabama-Missouri game from the fall was on the SEC Network one day this week, and I was watching some of it. And I saw a play that happened that was kind of weird that I hadn't seen before, where I think it was Waddle. Mm-hmm. He catches a little pass out in the flat, and he's going for the pylon, and he's got the ball in his – he's going to the left pylon. He's got the ball in his left hand.
Okay.
And as he's got a defender coming up on him, so he dives for the pylon. But while he's about to dive, he puts the football in his right hand, and then his elbow hit the pylon mm-hmm. with the ball hadn't crossed the plane of the goal.
Oh,
so he was out of so it wasn't a touchdown.
Not, no touchdown. Yeah. Yes.
And they reviewed it and everything, and whoever the referee, you know, the TV referees, he's speculating. Oh, here's what they're looking at. Blah blah blah. And he was right.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't a touchdown, but it was Alabama's ball first down at the half-yard line. What do you think happened?
Najee Harris touchdown.
I think it was. Najee. Yeah. Yeah.
And
they
I'm sure,
scored on the next play.
I'm sure the Bama fans were incredulous over that, too. How is that not a touchdown?
Yeah, but I've never seen that. But I get it. So just hitting the pylon doesn't guarantee
right,
a touchdown.
You know, I've always been one, and this is not to, as you say, get too deep in the weeds on this. I think you should have part of your body and the ball in the end zone. Mm-hmm. I don't know about, like, just the stretch and reach. I think you're the spirit. It's called a touchdown.
Yeah, yeah.
I think you should have part of your body and the ball.
I worry about that when I figure out what a catch is.
Oh, my God. It's like, what is – when all that stuff started 4 or 5 years ago, thinking, like – we used to not have this problem.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, we're still getting cheated in the national TV game with the biggest TV in the world, but yet when we were all out playing backyard football, we never got into debates on whether you caught it or not.
Hey, that's not a catch.
Well, did you make a football move?
Yeah, what? Yeah, we're playing football.
We're playing football.
It's a football move.
I mean, that's the thing, too, that's happened, again, going back to the 18 game with Josh Jacobs touchdown, if you put – you can speed the film up to make it look however you want it.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like the super slow-mo, has ruled a fumble Alabama. Recovered Alabama. Go. Touchdown, Alabama. It's like, oh, my God. But, yeah, but in real time, things are going to look different than if you
course.
Go super slow-mo on
of
something.
Course.
That's where, again, when replay was put in, it was put in to prevent just some egregious error from deciding the outcome of a game. Like, oh, my gosh, he didn't catch that pass.
Right. Right.
Or holy cow!
Yeah,
yeah,
his foot
stepped out of bounds on the 50.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah,
that's what it's for.
He didn't score.
I agree with you. It's not for the
second and eight.
Yeah.
Oh God. Or is the ball on the 34, the 34 and a half?
Right. Right.
Because in the end, and Dave, do we talk about this in baseball? In the end, you've got rhythm of the game and pace of play too.
Absolutely.
So I mean, in the end, it's like. And I know you and I agree on this. If you can't tell in like 15 seconds, like just go with the original call. They'll just keep going.
I wish they would incorporate that into their thinking. Speaking of, we won't dig too deep since a lot of people will be listening to this after the series has started. Georgia tomorrow night, which would be Thursday night, opens up a 3-game series with Auburn. They have the worst record in the league, but they are not the worst team in the league.
It is incredible.
And they hit a lot of bombs.
They do. And we were, and it's getting warm here now, too.
Yes.
Our park goes from a pitcher's park to a hitter's park.
When it gets
in
warmer.
In about a week and a half.
And we have temperatures in the mid-80s coming up these next few days.
So it's going to, and you know the Ole Miss series, it's crazy. It's like, it's cold, then we get about 2 weeks of temperate, mm-hmm. and then it just gets hot. It is nuts. We knew Auburn had played a lot of close games, but when you really start paying attention, and I was digging through some of their stuff Tuesday night after we got home from the Tech game and was looking through some Wednesday morning, the number of one run and extra inning losses, it's almost one of those where you would think it's mathematically impossible that a higher percentage of those games didn't go their way.
Right.
So they're, 3-15 coming into Athens. They could very easily be, 10-8.
I agree.
A stretch.
Well, even if they, so they've got, 8 games they've lost by a run in the conference, another game that they lost in extra innings.
Mm-hmm.
So what if they were 5-4 in those instead of 0-9? Then you're looking at 8-8
and 10.
Yes.
And you still say, boy, they've had some tough luck.
I know.
But it's just so.
I know. And those things even out, maybe not always in the same year, but mm-hmm. those things do even out.
Yeah, so Auburn's got a really, really good team.
And they didn't play yesterday either.
Yeah, that's a thing.
And they were at home this past weekend.
And the Dogs, we lost a tough one to Tech on Tuesday night, and it was a thing of the walks hurt us. And Dave and I could kind of see it. We looked like a tired mm-hmm. team, and we're just in a stretch now. We got 7 games in 9 days, and you know, flying back from Missouri. Now the team got back on Sunday night, and then having to play Thursday through Saturday. The boys have got finals right. coming up, so this is that time of year you just grind and push through. But what you do see happen, if you can kind of survive these 2 weeks, once finals are over, then for the guys like, all right. Then the focus is straight baseball then, and you can kind of see that light at the end of the tunnel. So that's when I think you see guys start to get a little rejuvenated.
They'll get that second win, maybe third win, just depends on what you want to call it.
No doubt.
But hopefully it'll be a good weekend for the Georgia baseball team. Before we get out of here, though, we were talking about what's a catch and what's not a catch. I want to ask you, what's a no-hitter and what's not a no-hitter? Does Madison Bumgarner deserve to get credit for a no-hitter?
Yes, and you can put an asterisk by it and say it was a 7-inning game, but it was...
They knew going in it was going to be a 7-inning game.
The length of a game is going to be 7 innings. The Braves didn't get a hit. That's a no-hitter in my book, and if you want to put an asterisk...
Put 7 in parentheses.
Didn't the pitcher... This guy had a great curveball back in the 80s. I think he pitched for the Braves for a year or two. A guy named David Palmer.
Who had a 5-inning perfect game taken away.
Yeah, but I mean, you put an asterisk.
But at least in that one, though, the game was scheduled to go 9.
Right. But I still think it's worth an asterisk.
Yeah.
Hey, this guy.
It was an official game.
Yeah,
he threw a perfect game.
You
put an asterisk by it. But the ones that, like, they know going in,
a
7-inning game, it's not like it was a shortened game or anything like that. It was what it was.
And again, if you want to put an asterisk by it, say scheduled 7-inning game.
Like, by the way, Bumgarner was asked about it, and he said, well, I didn't give up a hit.
So no hitter. Here's the other thing, too. The Braves, this weird place, they only got one hit the other game, right?
That's right.
So I don't think, oh, yeah, yeah, we'd have got like 6 or 7.
Yeah.
That's like, you got one hit in 14 innings. Yeah.
Not good.
Not good.
Not good. But, hey, they've bounced back pretty good these last 2 days. So
baseball, it is, and I've heard Bill Shanks on with you in the morning so many times talk about it, that in some of the Braves' critical losses, they haven't scored. And I don't know if it's just the way the game is now, where it's kind of the home run strikeout deal, kind of an all or nothing. And it's not just the Braves, but listen, Georgia's been like this during the last month. But how many teams does it seem like they either score 7 or 8 or you get 0 or 1?
Yeah. Yeah.
There's just not much of that happy medium.
Well, maybe it has to do with, some days you're connecting and you're hitting home runs, and other days you're striking out.
It always comes back around. We know that. But you still have to be able to put the ball in play and manufacture runs. You got to be able to do both. You got to hit for power, and I'm a home run guy. You got to be able to hit for power, but you've got to be able to move runners along. I mean, you got to be able to score in multiple ways, just like in football. You got to be able to score in multiple ways.
Sure, sure. And that's the thing, because you've talked about that forever. It's like, if you're not good on offense – in any sport, you're going to have trouble winning.
You are. At some point, you just get worn down.
Yeah.
I mean, you can have the greatest defense in the world in football.
Well, last night's game was a perfect example to me, where Tech led
the whole way.
The whole way. And Georgia kept cutting into the lead, but it's just hard to play from behind.
How many times have we seen DJ in basketball, let's say we're down 17,
mm-hmm.
and we fight, and we get it to 2 or 3.
You see that a lot.
But the next thing you know, you're back down 9 again.
Yeah, and it's deflating.
Yeah, it is hard to make another push at
it. Tech getting that insurance run in the ninth
that was
big.
Huge. So even if, let's say you're down 17 in hoops, if you come back and catch him, and even if you lose the lead again, if you just get that lead, mm-hmm. that makes it easier if you've got to make a second comeback.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
if you go from 17 to down 3, then they hit a 3 to go down 6. It's just,
I know.
But it's hard playing from behind.
Well, JD, we got the Dogs and Auburn coming up Thursday, Friday, Saturday. No midweeker next week, but an interesting road trip to number one Arkansas.
Be in Arkansas. And
by the way, how did Auburn do at Arkansas?
Mm-hmm. Lost 2 one-run games in an extra inning
game. Yeah. Yes. Mm. So
We always eat well in Fayetteville. We know that. So,
and we'll see our man Hognoxious.
Hognoxious. And I'm wondering if they've got for baseball. They pulled out one time at a Lady Dogs game out there. Their versions of Harry Dog. They had pork chop was the small one out there. Then they had the big one that they had bouncing around out there was called Boss Hog.
Boss Hog.
That was pretty good, too. And then I think they had one called, like, Little Pig or something. But Boss Hog was my man. I was like, that's a mascot.
I haven't even seen what their attendance figures. I don't think they're completely open, are they?
Does it seem like? I think we looked at the numbers. They're a little over half, maybe.
They may be moving in a progressive direction.
Bet you by the time they're hosting, then it's going to be full.
Yes. Yes. And you know what? They have got as good a home field advantage as anybody in the country.
100%.
That place rocks.
It's a we've said before, people go, what's the nicest stadium? I say, like, well, let's just say between Ole Miss, Mississippi State, LSU, A&M, and Arkansas. All right, we'll take David and I back to our day. Do you like Elle McPherson, Christy Brinkley, Rachel Hunter? Pick your favorite SI swimsuit model from the 1980s.
It really is.
Because they're all 10s.
Yeah.
And each one of them might have a little nuance here or there, but Arkansas is at the top of the list.
They are.
For sure.
They have got quite the home field advantage for sure.
And hopefully we've got a series win over the Auburn Tigers heading out. Because if we win the series, we'll be over 500 in the league. And when we were 1-4 losing in the sixth in College Station, I would not have bet that we would see that this season.
Let's keep our fingers crossed. Hope for a good weekend. Next week, we'll get to break down the draft.
Oh, I can't wait.
See how that goes. I know. And by the way, like, when we're at Foley this weekend, the draft's going on like the whole time we're there.
Oh yeah, we'll have the running
one
ticker.
Eye on. No, it won't be like Brent Musburger calling the Georgia Kentucky game, but it's like, basically calling the LSU Alabama game.
It's like people who want to watch that can watch that. I think I told you this. I was just incensed because when Georgia wins early, it's so much fun enjoying games the rest of the day. And when we won the Chick-fil-A Peach Bowl, had gotten done with everything, and I got home, and I was going to sit back and watch. I was looking forward to the Orange Bowl with A&M and North Carolina, two teams I don't know if they had ever played before.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, this is, I love the Orange Bowl and the pageantry. The whole third quarter and into the fourth, all they're talking about is the Ohio State-Alabama game. I wound up just muting it.
Oh, yeah, I know.
And then I'm thinking, if I was a North Carolina fan or an A&M fan, I would have been losing my you-know-what. But I'm like, can you just talk about this game?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, maybe not. Alabama and Ohio State's going to get plenty of play.
You think people are going to talk about that?
But it's like, this was a great game.
Yeah.
And, you know, instead of like, what do you think they're going to do here? Well, boy, you know, Justin Fields and Mac Jones. I'm like, really? It's a third and three in a tie game.
Hey, announcers, you're missing a really good game.
You're missing a really good game here.
Yeah.
So, anyways, that's just a little gear grinder. Right.
Man shakes fist or whatever it is. Man, at clouds.
Old man yells at
clouds.
All right, so if you would Ojulari be the first dog you were taking? Like, if you had three picks, it could go George and George only.
Stokes and Campbell.
I like Stokes a little better with the ball skills, I think.
Yeah.
But Campbell's great, too.
But I think we'll hopefully see Azeez go in the first round.
I think so.
Yeah.
He helped himself.
And maybe one of those other guys can slip in there as well.
Like we said, Stokes won the 100-yard dash in the state of Georgia.
Is he fast?
Yes. And he's got ball skills, too. And there'll always be a – I'll tell you, a guy, you know, he was only with us 1 year. I like that Trey McKitty.
Oh, I know.
He could be a steal for somebody, I think.
In fact, when I saw his name, I thought, oh, wait a minute, I got to do a double take on this. Mm-hmm. That's right. So he's in the draft.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to be interesting for sure. Hope everybody has a good and safe weekend, or if you're listening to us on the weekend, hope you're having a good and safe weekend. We will probably record next week on Wednesday also, I guess. So,
sounds good.
So that'll get us.
We're going to be on a plane. How are we getting to Fayetteville? Hey,
there's just no way to get there. How do you get to Fayetteville from Athens? Well, you should go to Ben Epps and get on a plane.
Chadas.
It's a lot easier. All right, this has been episode number 185 of the Crossover Podcast. Jeff Dantzler from the home team, David Johnston from the morning show. Again, hit us up in the App Store if you have an iPhone, or Google Play, the Android, for the 960 The Ref app. It is fantastic. We love it. And one of the cool things about it is you can tap the app, the open mic feature, and you can let us know how you feel. Mm-hmm. So that is that. All right, we are desperately out of time. Our ode to the great Tony Schiavone. Hey, thanks so much for listening, and we appreciate you here on 960 The Ref and the 960 The Ref app.
You've been listening to The Crossover on 960theref.com.